Hello and welcome to The Secret Life of Songs, a podcast on the making and the meaning of classic pop records. I'm Anthony, a musician who writes and performs music under the name Sky Coloured, and this week I'm going to be looking at One Fine Day, written by the famous husband and wife songwriting team, Jerry Goffin and Carole King, in 1963.
One fine day, you'll look at me, and you will know our love was meant to be. One fine day, you're gonna want me for your girl. Oh yeah, the arms I long for will open wide. You'll be proud to have me right by your side. One fine day, you're gonna want me for your girl.
A quick run through of contemporary reviews of the song reveals the way it's typically been heard. Music writer Richie Unterberger called it exuberant and catchy, and you'll typically see it described as upbeat, peppy, or feel good. It was selected by the Chiffons as a follow-up to their number one hit single, He's So Fine, partly because it also had the word fine in the title, but also because they were looking for something in a similar vein, light, sweet, and upbeat.
He's so fine, wish he were mine. That handsome boy over there, the one with the wavy hair.
At first glance, the two songs seem similar. They're both about hope and the possibility of love, and both about a particular man who embodies that love. They both dramatize that yearning in a way that appears to be, as many listeners have found them, upbeat, in both the musical sense of having quick tempos, but also in the sense of being optimistic. They both seem positive at first listen, that the promise of love will be fulfilled. But despite all that, I've never been able to shake the sense that the later song, One Fine Day, contains an unmistakable note of sadness, and it's that sadness that makes it a hit. Something like what the great Motown songwriter Lamont Dozier called the sad sweet spot at the heart of every great love song. In this episode, I'm going to talk about the musical construction of the song to explore this tension, to find the ways the songwriters managed to express both the lover's hope and her heartbreak.
Though I know you're the kind of boy who only wants to run around, I'll keep waiting and someday, darling, you'll come to me when you wanna settle down.
In many respects, One Fine Day presents itself as a to-the-template breezy pop hit, a product of the brill-building songwriting machine, which in the late 50s and early 60s was at the heart of the American music industry. Songwriters and producers associated with the Brill Building, a complex of offices and studios on 49th Street and Broadway in Manhattan, were responsible for dozens of hugely successful singles, from Dusty Springfield's The Look of Love to the Ronettes' Be My Baby. Its heyday is conventionally seen in pop music history as representing the interlude between the explosion of rock and roll in the 1950s and the so-called British invasion in the mid-1960s, that reworking and repopularizing of rock and roll by bands like the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. Many see it as symptomatic of the music industry wresting back control of pop music production after the unexpected popular success of rock and roll, the reassertion of industry control, and the reimposition of an effete reactionary musical refinement to what had briefly seemed urgent, vital, even revolutionary. Bob Dylan is typical in this respect when he writes in his memoir Chronicles that things were pretty sleepy on the American music scene in the late 1950s and early 60s, at a standstill and filled with empty pleasantries.
One fine day, we'll meet once more, and you'll want the love you threw away before. One fine day, you're gonna want me for your girl.
Does One Fine Day then count as one of these empty pleasantries, a perky but ultimately insubstantial piece of music? Well, for a start, it is, in a technical sense, upbeat. I take the tempo of the song to be around 177 beats per minute, and structurally, it's absolutely regular and thus comforting. We have an 8-bar intro, an 8-bar verse, an 8-bar chorus, and so on. Harmonically, there's certainly a lot in the song that's designed to reassure us. I used the last episode in this series to introduce the tonic chord, which is the chord formed on the first note of the scale, and often known as the home chord because conventional music starts and ends on it. One Fine Day is grounded in it. We start on the tonic at the beginning of verse one. So we have one fine day. And then it kind of goes elsewhere for the duration of verses one and two. But at the end of verse two, where it's about to transition to the bridge, the ending is a very, very stabilizing cadence to take us back into the tonic. And then we'll go to here and...
Though I know you're the...
And then we're into the bridge. But even the bridge ends with an emphatic return to the tonic by the use of a huge perfect cadence, that chord change of the dominant chord to the tonic I talked about in the last episode, which is the cadence that most strongly affirms the home key.
You'll come to me when you wanna settle down, oh.
And then we're back into that nice home chord again. Overlaid on such strong harmonic and structural foundations are two overlapping riffs in the introduction. The famous piano riff, which is being played by Carole King herself on the recording. And the figure the backing singers repeat. This style of singing derived from the doo-wop style of the late 50s had been heard prominently in the previous Chiffons hit. He's So Fine opens with that
doo-lang, 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 doo-lang.
So it made sense for them to revisit that style in the follow-up. But what gives the opening of the song its tremendous exuberance is the arrangement of these riffs one on top of each other. The fast tempo and the layers of riffs combine to produce a sense of overflowing excitement, of having too many feelings at once to make sense of them. So where does that undertow of sadness I spoke about at the beginning stem from? Well, if we look a little closer at the harmonic content, we can see the widespread use of chord 6, which in this case is E minor. And this chord, in a major key, is always a minor chord, and is, for my money, the most important chord in pop, besides 1, 4, and 5, the primary chords I introduced in the previous episode. Those chords in a major key are all major chords, so in this case we've got G major on 1, C major on 4, and D major on 5. But the chords that fall on 2, 3, and 6, almost completing the whole scale, are all minor in a major key. So in this case, it would be A minor, B minor on 3, and then E minor on 6, which is the one that comes up most often in One Fine Day. Songwriters have always needed to reach for those minor chords to darken the mood of the song. None more so than chord 6, which is especially useful in that two of its three notes, so in this case E minor is made up of E, G, and B, two of those notes are also in the tonic chord, G, B, and D of G major. And what's more, its root note, the bass note of the chord, which is E, is two notes down from the tonic note. And so, almost invariably, when we get that chord 6, that minor chord, we feel it as a fall. On some level, we're aware that it's two steps down from the tonic, and that's often how it is heard. For instance, in One Fine Day, tonic,
One Fine Day.
We've got that dropping down, very common use of that minor 6. In fact, that sense of fall is so well established with that chord that the chord is sometimes simply known as the minor fall. It's the chord that Leonard Cohen refers to in his song Hallelujah. If you remember, it goes like this: the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall. And it's clever because as he's singing that, he's going to that minor chord. How does One Fine Day use this minor fall chord? Well, it's used in two ways. Firstly, it's heard briefly in the four-bar loop of the intro, which is also the musical accompaniment underpinning the chorus. So I'll just play that for you. The intro goes like this. There it is. It's exactly the same sequence in the chorus.
One fine day, you're gonna want me for your girl.
The other way that it's used is in the verse form, which is an 8-bar chord sequence consisting of 2 bars of the tonic.
One fine day.
That's the tonic note. Then we go to the dominant for 2 bars.
You'll look at me.
That 4-bar sequence of tonic to dominant is a very grounding sequence. 2 strong foundational major chords. And it heightens the anticipation that we get before that twist upwards to the minor chord, the moment of pathos.
You will know our loved ones.
Its route back to the tonic is coloured slightly by its descent to the minor fourth chord. I'll just play that for you. We're on this E minor, we're going to drop down to a C minor. This is technically a dissonant chord in a major key because we flattened the sixth note of the major scale. It should be a C major. Lots of songs go like that, but this one just colours it slightly. We don't really feel it as dissonant, partly because it's a harmonic device that is so familiar. It comes up again and again in classic pop songs, as does this general sort of sequence, the 1-5-6. These chord changes are part of a very recognisable toolbox of standard pop songwriting techniques used by songwriters throughout the history of pop, but partly because it's exactly songs like One Fine Day that such devices became archetypes of the pop style, and partly because they're used in combination with the other elements of the song, that they're capable of expressing something quite layered with great immediacy. At this point in the song, the lyric is the climactic "You'll know our love was meant to be," delivered by the singers without a trace of doubt, declaring maximum assurance. At the exact moment, the harmony darkens, and the result is a sort of dramatic irony. We know what the singer doesn't. He may never want her for his girl. A suspicion lent credence by the equivalent lyric in the final verse, "You will want the love you threw away before," a key line hinting that the relationship, except in the mind of the singer, is something that's already over and is now beyond her reach. There's also the crucial interaction of the melody and harmony, and it's here again that we can see the song's initial sunny confidence being undermined. The songwriters peppered the song with chromatic dissonances. We've already seen that flattening of the sixth note in the verses to produce that minor subdominant chord. But there's also the use of flattening the major third of the scale, which would make it minor. We're in G major, but we're very often getting that minor third over the top of it, producing a clash. This is a device that's directly taken from the blues tradition. In fact, it's known as a blue note, to take a major third and flatten it. They do it in the opening piano riff, for example. We got it there, and it also comes up in
"You will want the love you threw away before."
The flattened third in the melody is also heard as part of some of the song's elaborate vocal style, which is how the performers inject a sense of emotional urgency into the song. This is known as melisma, a device used when setting words to music when more than one note is used for a single syllable. When it's used as prolifically as it is here, most lines contain it, often as four-note melismas. So, for example,
one fine day, you'll look at me.
What I did on me there was to sing four notes for that one syllable.
Me, you will know our love was meant to be.
That's also a four-note melisma. It's also heard extensively on Girl in the chorus.
One fine day, you're gonna want me for your girl, oh yeah.
Melisma has an emphasizing effect. It adds vehemence to whatever the line is expressing. In this case, the cumulative effect of the song's many melismas to my ear is one of an innocent longing, performed as they are in the singer's girl group naive style. You could say they're at once an expression of the singer's sadness and her defiance of it. It's often been noted that Jerry Goffin got the idea for the title of this song from an aria in Puccini's opera Madame Butterfly, Un bel di vedremo, One Fine Day, We Will See. Writing on this song never takes the link past the simple fact of its common title. A quick recap of the plot of the opera, and specifically the role of that aria, suggests there may be more parallels between the two pieces. Madame Butterfly is a 15-year-old Japanese girl who marries a visiting US naval officer, Lieutenant Pinkerton, who secretly intends to divorce her when he has to return to America. Her family disown her when she converts to Christianity. Un bel di vedremo, a song visualizing Pinkerton's ship appearing on the horizon, is sung by her at the start of Act 2, when Pinkerton has been gone for 3 years. He will return in the final act, but with Kate, his American wife, and only to retrieve the son he has fathered with Butterfly. It seems to me that what Goffin and King did in One Fine Day was make a thoroughgoing and ingenious Brill-building update on Puccini's famous aria. They saw that, like the girl group idiom as a whole, Butterfly's story is about adolescent love, and understood that Butterfly's particular tragedy, that she is trapped in a fantasy, Pinkerton does not love her as she loves him, would map perfectly onto a pop song about the overwhelming experience of young, unrequited love. In place of Pinkerton, we have the boy who only wants to run around. And just as Butterfly dreams of him climbing the hill to meet her, the chiffon singer sees him coming to her with arms open wide. We even have a hint of the social shame Butterfly suffers and needs Pinkerton's return to undo when the chiffon singer dreams of him, proud to have her by his side. Part of the song's achievement that its tragedy is worn so lightly. The songwriters give us the sense both of the thrill of infatuation and the bitter disappointment of its rejection. And in doing so, they demonstrate a quality common to a lot of great songwriting, the capacity to express apparently contradictory emotions simultaneously. And what emerges is something closer to the actual experience of love than either words or music could manage independently.